Saludos, la verdad, listeners. This is Undocu Talks, the podcast by immigrant youth for immigrant youth, where we discuss topics around immigration through the lenses of news, education, and culture.
The revolution is here! The revolution is here, people!
We invite you to listen to our podcast on all major podcasting outlets. We also invite you to follow us on social media, including Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Undocu Talks.
You're now listening to La Verdad Podcast. Bueno, mi gente, welcome back to another episode of La Verdad Podcast. This is your host, Christian.
And this is your co-host, B Fig on the mic.
That's a new one, right? Did you practice that?
I did. The whole last right time here. We had this conversation that it wasn't flowing or I had the same thing, so I practiced a new one.
You know, I was thinking about the other day, I was trying to come up with something new, but I'm like, you know, it's part of the brand already. I feel like I say the same thing in the beginning, so I kind of want to keep it like that. One day someone probably make a meme out of it or
you know
a
what?
T-shirt
That's when
out
you
of
know
it.
You've like done it when but someone makes it. A meme out of you.
I'm just going to make my own meme.
Me too. I've done that before.
So how have you been?
I've been really good. Work has been good. I think last time we talked, it was like really stressful because it was so new, but I think I've gotten into the swing of things.
Yeah, and now we've officially hit fall.
Finally.
Right? Yeah, the last time we were here, I was sweating. I always sweat before the podcast because of all the lights and
He's
all
like,
that.
He's like, turn on the AC. It's like 20 degrees in here.
But before the last podcast we had, it was kind of, it was really warm outside. I think it was one of the hottest days out there. So it's nice to now be able to be in the fall. I'm not a big fan of this pumpkin spice everything that you start seeing, but I do like going to the apple orchards and going and picking the pumpkins and all that stuff.
And then we went to go pick raspberries recently too. Yeah. That was the first.
Those are the cool things I like about fall. I'm a big fall weather. I like wearing hoodies and I like being able to just enjoy the cold because I hate the heat. But
I don't like the heat, but I don't like being cold.
No. Well, it's here, so we'll be getting warm. Also joining us today here on the podcast, we have a special episode. We have one that we've been wanting to have for a very, very long time. We just didn't find someone that had the expertise that we were looking for.
Yeah.
I feel like we finally found it. Joining us today here at the podcast, at the Segundo Ribelvis Cultural Center, I forgot to mention that earlier, is Nicole Holmes, who's a sexual health educator, also has her own thing going on as Nikki Hearts Public Health. Thank you for joining us today. How are you? How have you been? that couldn't come out.
Hello, everybody. I've been doing very well. Fall is my favorite season, so I am living my best life.
It is the best.
She loves the pumpkin spice.
Actually, I do. I do, but I don't drink coffee, so I very much draw the line. I like pumpkin spice, lattes, frappe. If it even sounds like coffee, I don't like it.
Really?
I do frappes, mochas, cappuccinos. I try coffee once a year just to verify.
To see if it changes.
And every year without fail. It's probably because I try like Starbucks and Folgers every year. I probably need some.
We got to hook you up with some Bustelo. We got to hook you up with some Bustelo, some like Puerto Rican type coffee. Bustelo is Colombian, but that coffee will keep you awake for the whole day. I just had a little bit.
Some good coffee, not this.
Yeah, I don't really like the Starbucks. If I go to Starbucks, I'm like, let me just get that tea or something. But
plus, I heard that they like burn. This could totally be false, but I heard that they like burn the coffee grounds because I guess it like makes you want more. Like it makes you more addicted to
really?
It.
Really. I never heard of it.
Because you know, like, coffee's like a drug.
Did you see that in one of those Snapchat stories?
Shut up.
Because you're the only person that watches the Snapchat stories.
It sounds very much like a nefarious Starbucks that's going on. Like, I see a barista
in the
background.
I always watch
Snapchat. I just see a barista
story.
In the back with, like,
one by one. Trying to turn it off.
No, I'm serious. Like, I feel like that's what I heard because it makes you, like, more addicted to it. Whatever.
One of the benefits of not being a coffee drinker is that I feel like at Starbucks, you know, when I go in, I feel like I can tell everybody, like, yeah, this is the best pastry to get. You want to get this? Yeah. You want to get this juice done up this
Yo, way. I'm a fan of the lemon cake there.
Everything outside of coffee, I do.
Yeah. That lemon cake is fire.
Oh, yeah.
I have
oh,
it. Yeah. Like, every time
the banana
I go to
bread is really good.
Banana too. Bread, if they warm it up, they got to warm it up. Yeah. Because if that thing's cold,
otherwise, it tastes good. It tastes like whatever time they made it. Like, yeah. Okay, this is four, but this definitely tastes like 9 a.m. Okay.
So, Nicole, or can I call you Nikki, or which one do you prefer?
Either or, as my mom's ex-boyfriend would say, just don't call me late for pork chops.
Oh, my God.
I did not like him, but that quote I love.
Dang. So, can you tell us briefly what you do and what brought you towards becoming a sexual health educator?
Okay, so I am a born and raised thoroughbred Chicagoan, was actually born and raised in the city limits,
yes.
606. When I turn on my faucet, Lake Michigan's coming out. So I'm like Chicagoan.
Yeah.
And I am a result of the Archdiocese of Chicago. I did, as I like to say, a 10-year bid in Catholic school. So from age 8 until 18, I was in Catholic school. And I think I went through two different abstinence programs during that time. But really no concrete sex ed. I will say in my high school, it just recently closed down. Rest in peace to Queen of Peace High School.
Okay.
It recently closed down, but I will say, even though they were, you know, a Catholic high school, so they did have to go by what the Archdiocese said, they were very much a social justice oriented high school. So, you know, at the surface, they had to be like, yes, you know, we only support abstinence education. I mean, while the teachers were like, God, I'm so nervous.
Yeah.
So, having those experiences in high school where I feel like I had to help educate my friends on the sly because we, you know, were not allowed to be taught sex education kind of really fueled that start for me. And so full time, I do work in the public health HIV prevention field. Outside of my full time job, I teach sex ed to middle and high school students as part of a tutoring program. And then I also just recently started my Facebook platform called Nikki Hearts Public Health. I'm still trying to figure out what it is I want to do with it. Right now, I just want to make it a community resource hub for marginalized communities. So I'm thinking people that are, you know, Black, Latinx, Latino, Latina, LGBTQ, people with disabilities, like making sure that I am spreading the message of sexuality for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Although it says Nikki Hearts Public Health, I am very much like a one-trick pony within public health. Sex ed is my bread and butter, and I learned that very early on in life. So that's something I do like to do. And on the side, I also have another platform that I'm working on because I'm very interested in film. So I'm starting this YouTube page called SMRC, which is Sexuality Media Education Resource Center. So what I'm doing with that is I'll be reviewing TV shows and movies and books and kind of breaking down and dissecting the sexuality within
Interesting.
Them.
I like that name. That was dope. That was cool.
No, I'm good for acronyms.
One of the cool things that you mentioned, or one of the similar things that I saw too when I was growing up was, so I was the opposite. I went to Chicago public schools my whole life, and then I went to a Catholic university. So in public schools, probably high school mostly, you will find condoms, you know, in every, like they will give us, you had the ability to go to a counselor and get a condom or get a couple
condoms.
At your
high school?
Yeah, in my high school.
At
it
your
was,
high school?
Yeah, they were pretty big about
that. Oh my God.
Or there was always like
know
a bucket.
My
mind is blown.
What is this?
This was, I remember it happening mostly my junior and senior year because my freshman and sophomore, I guess they stopped it because they would do a lot of, they would get the condoms and blow
put
them up balloons, and do balloons,
water in them,
whatever.
Them, all kinds of things.
So then I went to college, and college was like, I feel like people are much more sexually active in college. And being a Catholic university.
I mean, yeah.
And then the dorms, like, let me tell you, the regulations were really weird, right? So in a Catholic university, you were allowed to have alcohol, which a lot of state ones, I don't think they allow you to have alcohol in your dorm. So you could have alcohol. You could have someone over until 2 in the morning with the door closed. But you couldn't have condoms. You couldn't give out condoms. You couldn't buy condoms in the store. And the teachers weren't allowed to talk about like sex or anything like that. So I remember when I first went in there, I was part of the student governing board. And
that's why you know all these rules, right?
Yeah,
because I feel like I don't know the rules.
We had it was the student governing board in my fraternity. We were both trying to do an event where we were gonna have like a sex ed kind of. And man, that was like all the priests came out,
like,
all the brothers of the school, like the Christian brothers. nope, you can't do that. But you can have alcohol on your event, but you can't. Wow. Like, so it was just very weird. So I could just imagine, like, going to a Catholic high school was probably much like that. Like, it was no sex till you're married. And that's probably why we wanted to have this episode, because being that we talk about a lot of issues within the Latino community, that's a big one where our parents have instilled that Catholicism in our head or that Christian thought
we
in our head.
We just didn't talk about it.
Yeah.
At least I didn't.
Oh, tú no puedes tener sexo, or you can't have sex till you're...
Like, I feel like it was a bad word to say sex. Like, I think when I started saying it, it was like, sex. Like, I would whisper it or something.
Yeah, yeah. We wouldn't bring it up. But... So let's just jump right into it. When you have when you're dealing with people in the minority community, especially within the Latino community, how does that conversation even start for you? and do you feel that little awkwardness come out from the other person when you're talking to them about it?
So I will say, now that I am so I've been teaching kids, like, as far as like sex and sex ed goes, since I was about 18, because once I got into college, I got straight into doing internships. Actually, my first time almost interviewing for an internship was in the middle of my very first HIV test. Like, as soon as she sat down and asked me about sexual health questions, I was like, okay, oh my god, I love sex ed so much, and I just want to help it. I have taught kids in alternative high schools. I've taught kids in juvie. Okay. And the reason I keep going back to youth is because once you have taught middle school boys about sex ed,
I was just gonna ask you,
all kinds of awkwardness
school.
Just go out, just fly out of the window. But I will say, I do like to start most of my sex ed lessons the same way. And so before I even introduce myself, I would just turn around to the class and just balls. And I just wait for those I just wait for those giggles to go. Balls.
This is how we're gonna start class today.
Scrotum.
Yeah.
Titties. Like, yeah. I say these things just to, like, get it out, to get the giggles out. And so to
that's
kind
a good
of
way,
start,
yeah.
I mean, just to help start with breaking down some of those barriers, because it's
an because I remember in high school we had this Mr. Bush, that was his name. Oh, the real tall.
Wait, but did you have sex education in middle school?
No, in high school. So we had sex ed in high school, and it was in the same guy that taught
and
sex ed.
And that's when you first
my
learned
mind
it.
Is blown right
yeah. The same guy that taught sex ed was this awkward, tall, like 6'5", ex basketball player that was really geeky looking. His name was Mr. Bush. Had a
And see, then at first I thought George Bush was gonna hit me. No. Oh, no, Bush.
Yeah, his name was Mr. Bush, and he talked like this. You know, so. He's like, ladies, you know, so he'll have this conversation. I didn't learn anything in that class.
Clearly.
It was just like just making fun of every single sentence that came out of Mr. Bush's mouth, man. It's hilarious. So I could just imagine when you go in there.
It sounds like sex and puppets. Like, this is Mr. Bush and this is Mrs. Bush.
Yeah. And then the most awkward was like when he would put like a video on, you know, and it was like a video of like a lady giving birth.
Uh-huh.
And he's like, oh, making noises like that, like the whole time. Like, dude, what are you teaching us? Like,
so you actually saw that on video?
Yeah. And it's a class, public school, a class of like 35 kids. This is the same guy that taught us driver's ed, and the same guy that was our PE teacher was also the sex health teacher.
School funding. Good old school funding.
I just find that, find it so weird that it wasn't until high school that you started learning about sex.
Yeah, I mean, they didn't have sex ed when I was in middle school. And is that a common thing?
Actually, that is incredibly common.
In
the Catholic school, we did, in middle school, we did an abstinence program. I think it was called Game Plan. Are you all familiar with the basketball player A.C. Green?
I'm not.
So he's actually a very good friend of Magic Johnson. So when it came out that Magic Johnson had HIV, he was like pretty much the anti-Magic. He, was not having sex until he was married. He was not flying people out. There was no like All-Star Weekend 1993 for him.
Yeah.
So he and his wife, they're now divorced, came up with an abstinence education. I love telling people that. They're now divorced. Came up with an abstinence education program. And that was the... that was the mild one compared to what the eighth grade class before us got, where they just looked at ooze and genitals, just pictures and pictures of genitals that had, you know, all kinds of, that may not have even been STDs, that may have been something else. Because one thing people don't realize is that pimples are going to show up everywhere on your body. Bodies are just pimple magnets, pretty much, and they're going to show up everywhere. So sometimes when you see pimples on your genitals, it's not an STD. In many cases, it's not. And so I actually don't even show those pictures when I teach kids, because those pictures are more so reserved for medical students, because that's really like the worst case scenario.
Yes, mm-hmm. yes.
That's absolutely what it could look like. Mm-hmm. So people, kids think like, oh, you know, I don't look like this, so I must be okay.
Yeah. So I don't have to get
tested. So was this like a scare tactic then? Like,
I feel like a lot of things.
This will happen. Yeah. That'll happen.
I feel like a lot of things were kind of like that.
Yeah.
Even when you talk about like back in the day when I was in school, it was the DARE program. The
yeah.
I never did DARE, but I did GREAT, which was the gang resistance one.
That we did that one too.
I can't remember if I did either.
DARE was the drugs one, right?
Yep.
Then there was the GREAT, which was for the gang. And it will come in and show, this is what a gang banger looks like. So everything was very much like. And you could you imagine? Like, I went to a school in the hood.
This is what a gang banger looks like.
You know, I haven't heard that phrase.
Yeah. Oh, I went to a school in the hood. And so, like, half of the class is dressed like that. You know?
They're like, just didn't look like.
So everybody looks around.
You look at them like, Timmy?
There's all these gang bangers everywhere.
I mean, a lot of them were gang bangers too. So, but I mean, it was very much scare tactic.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. We had Red Ribbon Week every week in the high school.
Oh, yeah, I had that too.
What was that called?
Red Ribbon
okay.
Week.
Which, as a kid, I only ever equated red ribbons with drugs, and now I can't equate them with anything else but HIV. But that's just so interesting that, as a kid, we had that every week in high school. They would bring the crashed car and like put it in front of the week of prom. And I'm sitting there like, wouldn't it be smarter to do like a crash limo? Most people aren't taking like a 1993 Jeep to prom.
Yeah, so. Yeah, or an old Toyota Corolla.
Pretty much.
Yeah, cause I did when I started sex ed, but like I don't know. I'm not saying it was good or bad, but like it was definitely in middle school when we started. But we did the whole like we had an egg and everybody got partnered up. Like it was a guy with a girl so that you were like,
so you could act like you had a kid or something.
Yeah. And you had to take care of the egg. Yeah, if it cracked, you failed.
I didn't have any of that till not even.
My question is, could you like secretly boil it?
I don't know. I probably wasn't even smart enough to think of stuff like that.
Yeah.
But you had to like create like the little bassinets. You had to put like cotton balls or whatever. And like, some people got like really into it, but it was always like a thing of like how you were gonna get paired up, because they're like, "Ooh, who's gonna be with whoever?" You know, and it was
yeah.
And this is like middle school, but oh, I don't even know who was my I can't remember who was my baby daddy at the time, but that was our sex ed class. It started that way.
Yeah, and I think like you were mentioning, you know, so schools took on a role of more of an abstinence. Was that more of a nationwide kind of thing, or
it was because I went to middle and high school during the Bush era, so absolutely it was. Yeah. Like I think Obama got elected my sophomore year of high school, so yeah, for a while there. Actually, in high school Spirit Week sophomore year, we had an abstinence speaker come and speak to us, and I guess because he was supposed to be funny and relatable and said really hip things that we were supposed to just
be cool with it.
Cool with it. And then he gave out this book that his wife wrote. It was called, like, Pure Woman. And it was, like, this whole list of things of, like, don't date a guy if he watches porn. Don't date a guy if he doesn't have a job. I'm like, I'm 14. We all don't have jobs. And they gave us rosaries and purity cards, which actually, to this day, I mean, honestly, I'm a non-religious heathen. But since I went to Catholic school, that Catholic guilt is just there. I cannot throw away a rosary.
Yeah.
I just can't do it.
Yeah. It gets ingrained. It gets ingrained. I mean,
still have that purity rosary.
Yeah, I grew up
now, but
I grew up very much Catholic. And you know, like I went to a Catholic university, which wasn't more like I didn't really realize that it was that strict till like my first day that I was there.
Mm-hmm.
In that sense, right? Because it's everything else was like party. Yeah. As soon as I got there and I'm like, we're praying before a class. That was so odd to me.
Ooh, okay.
You know? Because I went to a public school, so to me, like you wouldn't see a cross anywhere or anything like that. So the first class was with a Christian brother. That's what they call it. And he's like, all right guys, if you believe in God, you could go ahead and bow your head. If not, just sit there for a little bit. Let's do a quick prayer. And I was like, oh, this is
so you get the option.
Yeah. It was cool, but it was very weird for me the first time. So then I feel like talking to other people that went to that university, a lot of them came from Catholic high schools, Catholic grammar schools, and it was still very much ingrained in this abstinence mentality. Now, I feel that a lot of us that went through this abstinence mentality were very naive when it came down to the first time having sex or even protection or where to go, and we still feel weird buying condoms and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. How do you How do you break through that, or how do you talk to the kids about that particular, using being safe in sex?
So one of the things I love doing with the kids is giving them resources to kind of navigate around that. So sometimes with the awkwardness with condoms, for some people that doesn't go away. So what you do instead is, okay, this is a list of Walmarts in your area that have self-checkout. You're welcome.
Oh, kind of giving them
those kind of alternatives. Or telling them, so there's a website, ChicagoWearsCondoms.com, telling them like, okay,
I've heard about
that. List of places where you can go and get condoms for free. Mm-hmm. You don't even have to talk to people most times. You can just go in, snatch them, and go about your way.
Yeah.
And that's what I think is so important, I think, is the not only knowing that there are resources, but then having access to those resources. Mm-hmm. Because even though, like, I know we're talking a lot about like what it was like for us growing up and what our sex education looked like, and I know, you know, something we're going to get to is like, what is the sex culture now, how has it changed over the years? But I think back, like, I probably did, like, you know, we learned what all the sexual organs look like. It was very, very formal, but I still didn't understand like what sex was.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, and so then it was like awkwardly asking your friend, and they don't know either. Yeah. You know, so I didn't know what the resources were, or like how to ask, or I didn't get no list of like Walmart with the free, you know what I'm saying? Like,
and so. I think too, within here, I talked to friends of mine that, for example, Brazil, which is very big on sex culture in Latin America. Mm-hmm. It's not taboo as it is here, right? So sometimes they look at us and they're like, yo, like, why are you getting so weirded out by a girl walking around in a thong in the beach? You know, to them it's normal, or topless is normal.
Right.
So then from some of the research and some of the conversations that I've had with them, it seems that because here in the U.S., and feel free to chime in on that, because here in the U.S. especially, or perhaps the U.S. and Central America, is so taboo that we have much more of this, you know, rape culture and much more of this, like, non-consent culture going on here because it's so taboo. Whereas when you go to, like, Brazil and all them, because sex is out there so much and the sexual culture is out there so much, that there's not that much of a rape culture conversation or things going on in that form. What do you think about that?
Say it with me. Colonization.
Yeah.
So unfortunately, the country was almost founded on a rape culture. And it's interesting.
Yes.
That's true.
One of the main myths about sex in this country is that, especially with the current administration, there's this idea that men of color, particularly Black and Latino men, are somehow sexual predators. When if you look at all of world history, it's actually right. the opposite, where women of color are more so in danger from white men than the other way around. And I'm glad that you brought that up, because we live in a country where we're fine seeing full frontal nudity on a woman in a movie, but the Vagisil commercial still can't say vagina. The Vagisil commercial
that is very
does
true.
Not say vagina. Wash your V.
That is what? Very
I'm
true.
Gonna, now I have to
V
be more.
V is also velvet. Like, what is V?
Yeah. That is very true.
He's also for my name.
It's like, how can I trust you with, and they, but since they're washed, they're more so vulva health, because that's another thing, is that there's this whole thing where there's a lot of people that don't know the difference between the vulva and the vagina. And so that's another one where I use the face versus mouth demonstration, where I tell them like, okay, this is not your mouth. This is your mouth. This is a face. This is a mouth. And so I'll actually use my own face. Like, this is a vulva. This is a vagina. Yeah. So just giving them that like visual to kind of show them the difference between the two. And so with rape culture in this country, that is a buzzword these days, isn't
Oh,
it?
Big time, yeah. And there's so much going on, especially within the last 24 hours. There's and I feel like that's why it's the need that we need to have these conversations in any single platform that we can, because our kids and you know, I'm a father, I have a daughter, they need to understand what's happening, because we live in such a world where everything gets hush hush and don't say this or that, or we used to live in that, where then things like this are happening, where we have a Supreme Court about to be a Supreme Court judge who committed rape, and people never talked about it because everything's supposed to be hush hush, you know. So
or boys will be boys. Oh,
I hate that shit.
I forget who said that, but they're like, yeah, everyone
that
did that.
Bothers me.
Who is everyone? I didn't have this high school experience. Yeah,
that shit who bothers me so much, especially being a father to a daughter, you know. So it's like, oh hell no, boys will be boys, man. I'll kick your ass.
No, absolutely not. So,
I think it does all start like in the home too, and it's, you know, the work that I do, unfortunately, sometimes they're not always those parents that can be as supportive as maybe they should or could be due to just so many other factors. But I do truly believe that it should start at home. And if not, it's knowing where those avenues are at. Like you said, whether it's seeking out these organizations in your community or whatever. But I mean, even for me personally, I think things would have been a lot, like, I never had the sex talk.
Yeah.
You know, my parents never brought it up. It was just kind of figuring it out, you know?
Thinking about it, as a sex educator, I did not either. Yeah, I made my mom give me the talk, like, the night before I left for college. I'm like, I'm 18. At this point, I mean, I still hadn't had sex at that time, but I'm like, at this point, I know, logistics, got it, but I want you to tell me what it is. Because my mom, her version of sex ed was, she, her two favorite quotes were, boys don't wipe themselves after they pee. And then a boy will take you one of two places. They'll either talk about you in the locker room or take you home to their mom. And so, like, very much that, like, traditional.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And even my grandma, she tried to have the abstinence conversation with me where, that's my grandma, households of color. I was not going there, but she just came straight out and said, like, oh, you know, you're ready to get married when you're ready to give your body to a man or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking, I'm like, my mom was born October 1959. My aunt, her only sister, was born December 58. And okay, we're not going to go there, but okay.
Right.
I'm glad that you did mention your daughter, because actually October is Let's Talk Month. And that is actually a nationwide campaign to bridge the conversation about sexuality between parents and their, kids. Mm-hmm. And that could be a lifelong conversation. It starts when they're young, when you are teaching kids about their body parts.
Yeah. Using the right names.
Using the right words.
Yeah.
Nipples are not corns. I've heard of, you know, calling the vagina the fly fly, the lady, the flower, the flea flea.
You heard it all, right?
Yeah, I've had to have that conversation before, because my daughter's mom would refer to it as the butterfly, right? And we're not together, so it was hard for me to stay on the same page. And I had to have that conversation where it's like, no, because I don't want someone to then use that word
and just manipulate,
or let me see
her.
Your butterfly, you know. It's like,
exactly, that sounds
very nice, right? Like, oh yeah, I could do that. It's like, no.
That's another thing, teaching kids about good touch, bad touch, and that starts in kindergarten. That's a form of sex ed. That's a form of consent too, where you teach, I think it's very important, especially to teach kids that you don't have to hug everyone just because.
Yeah,
right.
Like, and I've started that tradition with kids in my life too, because I am not a mom, but it is my mission in life to get to, like, the Mary J. Blige level of auntie. So she's pretty much like the quintessential black auntie.
Yeah.
So very much like, if I can get to the level of, like, Mary J. Blige, it's like she just embodies auntie.
That is straight up, yeah.
So that's very much
funny.
Who I'm trying to be in life. Okay. And even with the kids in my life, I used to just put my arms out, but now it's very much like, can I hug you? Is it okay to hug you?
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, kids are really receptive to that, because they almost don't know how to take it, because you're like, you're the only person that's asked me all day. I've given like 90 hugs. You're the only one
that
has asked me. And so it's important to kind of build upon those lessons, because if you start early with good touch, bad touch, if you start early with people need to ask before they touch you, and they don't need to be touching you in certain parts of your body too, that bridges a lifelong conversation with consent. One trend that it just makes you so uncomfortable, and I know it's a part of sexuality for some, but this idea of, oh, you know, when he likes to put my panties down when I'm asleep, and I like to pretend like I'm still asleep, so I like help him lift them off. I'm like, that
yeah, there's a lot of those conversations that I've heard, or certain things, like you see memes out there, or certain,
or movies are even kind of inserting
movies for sure were very much about like very rapey, right, in that sense.
Yes.
But a lot of things that I've noticed from listening to other podcasts and certain fantasies that some people have, mm-hmm. is that, and I feel like because of the upbringing, because of the conversations that were not had with them, mm-hmm. that they're okay with this non-consent talk. And I think that kind of goes into one of the discussions that I wanted to talk about, was this whole, how do you approach consent? What is consent? And that what you just meant right now, what you just said right now, where all, you know, pulling the panties down and doing their thing, then eventually it's kind of in that, to me, it would be kind of like in that rape kind of category, that non-consent, because then you don't know. You never said yes to it.
It depends. Right? If you have established beforehand, like, you know, babe, this is a fantasy where I like people to, you know,
that is true. Yep. Panties
off when I'm asleep. I'm one of those people that, like, look, I fight like I've been locked up. If you touch me while I'm sleeping,
yeah,
I'm
you get killed.
Right? Yeah. Especially since I'm so used to murdered. Sleeping alone. So if somebody is touching me in my sleep, I'm like, oh no, alarm bells. What is going on? So if you have that conversation beforehand, because I definitely don't want to, you know, kink shame anyone. If getting your panties pulled off while you are asleep is your kink, go for it. But right. it's about having those conversations beforehand, because if you have someone that is not having those conversations, eventually they're going to pull someone's panties off. And let's say that person is not moving to help you. They're just moving to get comfortable in their sleep. Mm-hmm. They may see that as like, oh, this is a green light. I can keep going. If you have not had that conversation about consent beforehand, and that goes into almost everything. I work in the HIV testing field. We cannot even test you without signing an informed consent. Well, we have to read to you what is on the form just to make sure that you know that you're making an informed decision mm-hmm. for me to take this small sample of blood right. from your body to test you. Mm-hmm. And we cannot, that's another thing with that informed consent, we can't test you if you're drunk.
Mm.
Oh, that's because something. Of that, yeah.
Because it's not informed consent. So, right. It's not full enthusiastic consent. Right.
So if right. it comes down to that, where you can't test someone if they're drunk. Mm-hmm. Now, this whole conversation that we've had where a lot of these guys use the excuse, and not just guys, girls too, right? They'll use the excuse of, well, I was drunk, I didn't know what I was doing. What is the law right now, or if there is even a law about consent?
Well, it's more so, honestly, the law is more so in terms of, the law really needs to change.
Like, yeah. let's start too old school, probably,
there.
Right?
Like, I was trying to go through my mental Rolodex. I'm like, let's just start there. The law definitely needs to change, because laws tend to follow trends as well. And so people are still in this mindset where they're just now figuring out a rapist is not the people you see on Law and Order SVU. Like, it is, but it's not someone, statistically speaking, it is not the person in the bushes. Statistically speaking, it's somebody that you know, mm-hmm. somebody that you have led into your home under other pretenses, mm-hmm. but they came in with another purpose. That mm-hmm. is what rape is in more, you know, aspects, but the law kind of tends to follow that. And for every 100 people accused of rape, only mm-hmm. 3 ever see time in jail.
Yeah.
3.
Wow.
Yeah.
And that's not even including the amount of people that I have done it and no one has spoke up about it because of the fear of shame, mm-hmm. right? I think that's one of the biggest things that I see now. And even when I was in college, you know, that you will see certain things were happening and a girl will speak up about it and automatically that girl was pushed to the side, like, oh no, don't talk to her because she might accuse you of doing something mm-hmm. with her. And it was very sad. I remember I was in my dorm. And there was a in the dorm above me, something had happened in that sense, you know, and most of the people in my school thought of me as like the big Latino teddy bear, you know, like the big mean looking guy, but could be cool with them. Like, I used to dress really, really hood back then. Yeah. So like,
I've seen those pictures.
Yeah. Like, I remember, you know, this girl came through, she's like, oh, you know, like something happened. So I mm-hmm. quickly, being that I knew the student governing board and I was, you know, I knew the rules and regulations of the school, quickly went, took her to the counselor that we had. Mm-hmm. But I wonder how many times the same thing had happened and that person didn't have someone to go to, that, or perhaps went to someone and they said, you know what, just keep it hush, or I'll beat them up instead, or mm-hmm. do something like that. And it happens on a daily basis. Even the other way around, where a guy might not feel comfortable, a guy never gave consent, And it happens. And that's even more.
I'm so glad you mentioned that. That is definitely a big one where you've had men that have been coerced into sex because they feel like they have to prove a point.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Or this idea of you are 14 now. We think you might be gay. Here's a grown woman to do something to you to prove that you're not gay. Mm-hmm.
I heard that on a podcast before. One of the hosts of the podcast was mentioning that when he was like 12 to the age of like 15, he had a lady that will make him go and have oral sex with her. And he will laugh about it. He's bringing it up, like laughing about it. He's like, oh, that's why I hate giving head now, because of the fact that went.
Yeah. That's very traumatic.
But they started like talking about it, and he does certain things with women now. And they were like, dude, you do this because you went through this. So, like, you treat women like shit now because of what you went through. He's like, no, that's not it. It's like, yes, it is. Like, the way that you treat certain individuals is what you're doing now. And I feel like that's happening a lot within our community mostly, is that you have this circle going up around. And it starts from the age, from really, really young. And the fact that abstinence being taught heavily, they don't know what to do, and then you start getting into this weird circle, and the conversation is not happening. Yeah,
I mean,
and
50 Shades of Grey. I mean, that if you read the books and the story, I mean, he went through a very traumatic situation. 100% why he is the way he is, but.
That's another thing is like with BDSM, that is, you know, absolutely a valid kink, but from BDSM experts, apparently 50 Shades of Grey was not an accurate portrayal of it, and we can really go into a whole conversation with that one, because especially as a black woman, like, so you want to beat on me? Let's talk about,
let's go back,
let's talk about from 1620 until yesterday, like, about why that's about why that is. There's a lot of trauma behind that.
And there's also the conversation too that I've heard within the minority community, that there is people that will like to experience BDSM in the minority community, and because it's not talked about as much as it is in the white community, that they don't do it. Same thing with trans men, same thing with the lesbian and gay community within the Latino community especially. And I say Latino a lot because that's what I could relate to. I know exactly that it's so taboo that eventually bad things end up happening because no one has talked to them or they're not open about it. What is your take on, and this kind of goes with this question, what is your take on this, like, quote unquote liberated sex culture, or more conversations around sex culture happening now? Do you feel like it's going in the right direction? Do you feel like it's kind of going into,
well, what is two it ways? In your mind? Like, well, how would you define the sex culture? Yeah.
Well, the first thing that comes to mind is that people are very much more cavalier about eating ass and more.
This whole conversation of eating ass never happened. Like 5 years ago, nobody would ever talk about it.
Almost 2 years ago, people weren't really talking about it. But once, I think it was Jenna Aiko that said, you got to eat the booty like groceries. And it was just like this whole, like,
culture.
Almost to the point where I saw a meme on Facebook where they want to be able to, you know how you can change the color of, like, the people. There are people that want to be able to change the color of the peach and the eggplant. Like, no, you know those are still, like, fruits and vegetables.
Yeah, like, but it's been used so wrong.
Oh, my God, it's so funny.
But I will say liberated sex is just that I am so happy and also just a slight bit, you know, envious about the kids of, you know, color that are coming up behind us, because they just have this sense where they are really getting in touch with a decolonized sense of themselves. And so with that comes some of those decolonized notions about sex and open sexuality, the way that it was, you know, meant to be in general. And I will say that I love seeing it so much when you see things like Afropunk, where people are just like, pasty here, pasty there, titties out. I am so free and feeling myself. And I don't think that that's caught up to many people yet. And I will say that, unfortunately, it has gone mainstream in the way of, like, now it's almost capitalized. Like, a few years from now, you're probably going to see, like, Afropunk presented by Pepsi or something like that. Yeah. So, it has definitely been capitalized on, but I am grateful to see that it is opening conversations about slut shaming and about what it means to have liberated sex in general, because, I mean, technically speaking, men have never not had liberated sex.
Yeah.
It's more so, well, there's been a few points in history, but for the most part, it's more so about liberating women and femmes to have that expression, that open expression of sexuality.
Yeah, and I think it goes hand in hand, like you just touched it right there where it said, where there were certain parts in history you could think of, perhaps like the 70s, probably a little bit there.
Well, the 70s was very open. That was just...
Yeah.
Everything was open.
And there was a lot of
Studio 54. Noses and draws were open.
Yeah.
Everything was
open. Exactly.
Yeah. And then there was the conversation of, you know, men have always kind of had the okay to be, like, I feel, you know, when growing up, there was always like, more straight men, right? Mm-hmm. If I was to say, oh, I had sex with old girl 2 days ago and I just banged this chick today. Mm-hmm. It's like, damn, bro, you're a pimp. Like, you got all these girls. If a girl was to go out and say that, it's like, ew, what a whore, you know, mm-hmm. or little things like
that. Was that your boyfriend? Were you in love?
Yeah.
Like, giving all these qualifiers. Right. Like, your sex is not legitimized unless it fits into this particular box.
Yeah. Right. I would always get, I never really had this mentality to like, or woke mentality to like later on in life where I sat back and I said, man, it must be really hard. If I was a girl, you know, and I wanted to have multiple partners, it must be really hard to deal with your family, mm-hmm. your friends, your professors, everybody. And for a guy, it's like, oh, bro, you're doing it, man. You're living life. And it's taught like that since the beginning.
Like, I don't think my parents ever had a sex talk with my brother either. Yeah. You know, but it was always like, oh, you know, Jules, you bring all the girls, you know, whatever. And my brother's gay, but, you know, but I just think that neither of us had the sex talk. Yeah. And then, but if we did, it would have been, I feel like they would have been more afraid to have the sex talk with me mm-hmm. than with my brother because I was a girl.
Mm-hmm.
Even when you look at the first episode of Jane the Virgin, when you see Abuela tell Jane to like take that flower and crush it.
I just love that.
She was just talking about Jane the Virgin before.
I do love that show. I'm waiting for it to come back.
Yeah, me too.
So that conversation bothers me now, yeah. right? Mm-hmm. When I hear a kid and they're like, oh, how many girlfriends you got?
Like, none. What?
Yeah. And they ask like little 2-year-olds.
That shit bothers like me so to my parents, much.
Like, go read a book. Like,
how many, or you know, and it gets even deeper. Like, in the Latino community, you see a boy with curly hair, brown, black, curly hair. Then you see a boy with blonde hair. Oh, you got like 10 girlfriends. Oh, you got like 2 girlfriends. Mm-hmm. Like, it goes really deep.
Or
into,
looking
like,
at, you know, a little boy that just seems to be, or a kid in general that seems to be conventionally attractive. Like, oh, you're going to be a lady killer. Mm-hmm. Oh, they're going to have to lock you away, little girl.
Right.
Like, your dad's
right.
going to need a big old bat for you.
Yeah, or yes. where's the shotgun? Yeah. And I didn't think like that till I had my daughter. And that's when I was like, yo, like, I don't want my daughter to have to grow up. And there's certain things that I still do where I'm like, oh, like, I better not see no boy talking to her or nothing.
Yeah.
But now I understand that if she ever comes to me and has that conversation, I'm a little bit more, quote unquote, woke. And I could talk to her a little bit much better than what my parents probably did with me mm-hmm. or what I've seen other people do with their kids. And I still get a little weirded out if I hear, like, I never quite understood the whole slut shaming or anti-slut shaming mm-hmm. till I started to listen to, like, couple podcasts out there that have, there's one that's like,
I
the
mean,
anti-slut
shaming
podcast.
It took until
podcast,
high school you know? To get your sex education, yeah. so I can understand how you're delayed and everything.
Yeah, so what does this anti-slut shaming entail? Like, what does it mean?
So, what it is it's fighting back against the notion that a woman does not get to define her sexuality for herself, because even the opposite of slut shaming, there's the whole idea of prude shaming as well. So you don't have enough sex, you're having too much sex.
Okay.
If you're not having sex at all, there's an issue. And so even on the opposite side of slut shaming, there's just this judgment in general of women and their expressions of sexuality.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, at what point, because there could be this you know, liberated sex, right? You could have all this, but I feel like there's a thin line between this liberated sex and you need to be, you know, healthy in the way that you have your liberated sex. So we were just having this conversation earlier because we've seen it a lot being thrown out there a lot more, where people are talking about, you know, oh, like, you know, I have multiple partners and I don't mind that. But I get a little worried, and I'm hoping that they're being educated mm-hmm. in the multiple partners area. What's your take on that, and what are resources that they can learn a little bit more? They could still be their liberated self, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. But maintain this healthy lifestyle as well.
So I will say one of the first things that does come to mind is Planned Parenthood, because they are more of a sex positive entity. But it really goes into having a conversation with someone and meeting them where they're at. I know Chicago Recovery Alliance, they are they provide safe injection resources for people that inject drugs, and they come from an any positive change model, which is what people in the HIV testing field try to do as well. So we meet people at, okay, last year you had 26 partners. This year you had 20 partners. Okay, so let's talk about, you know, the difference between the two. Or last year you used condoms with one partner. This year you used condoms with five partners. Let's talk about the changes and what we can do to foster that positive change. And that goes into a whole wellness model, because if someone feels isolated because they don't have too many people to talk to, that is actually an opportunity to be exposed to STDs and HIV, because sometimes people find themselves having sex just for that sense of belonging, that sense of being connected to someone. And that goes into what it means to be sexually healthy. It's about, if you are, you know, fully realized human being, you're going into why you're having sex, who you're having sex with, do you need an emotional connection? Do you not need one? Because that goes into sexual health as well.
Yeah.
And if you have come to the conclusion of the sexuality that you are, that you are currently, you know, portraying is working for you, then that's one part of the equation. But I do have to come in, you know, as a health educator and just check in and make sure that we are finding the solution that, you know, works best for you.
Yeah. And I think it also should go in hand in hand with the mental health aspect of it. You know, are you really looking for this casual sex, or are you looking for a relationship with every single person that you're having sex with? And then now you're creating more trauma, or now you're feeding into your trauma. And, you know, instead of being a happy, healthy person,
to like self-esteem,
then it's like, oh, this person never texted me back.
Absolutely. That ties into trauma too, like having, you know, sex as some form of healing in some way. What does that look like for you?
I've seen that a lot too, and it's hard for, because I feel, and you guys can chime in, I feel like a lot of times for guys, there's that underlying factor that they don't really realize, that they're looking for something within all these women that they're sleeping with. But then there's also the guys that just want the pleasure behind the sex.
Or some sort of release.
Yeah.
Because I think it was like this notion of like, men don't tie the emotions to sex. They can just have sex and that's it. Whereas women...
For a sport. And I don't think that's necessary. Well, I can't say it's true, because for me, like, we can all talk about just ourselves, because we know ourselves, you know. So a lot of times when someone says that, perhaps there is guys out there that see it more of like that sport or bodies
and
they've had, you know.
Like, I mean, I've even been told like, oh, you know, you're always going to tie your emotions, and so that's why I shouldn't be this like liberated.
Like those superstitions or those ideas of soul ties. Have you seen the picture where the person?
Yeah, and it's like blending into each other.
It's blending into each other, or they're like opening their skin. There's like a bunch of faces coming out. Like, these are all the people. That
all the bodies.
Like, you know, and so I've been told that, you know, you cannot have sex with, like you said, everybody that you meet thinking that you're going to be in a relationship, because your emotions are always in it. And that's why it doesn't work for me as a girl.
Yeah, it varies.
You know, but yeah, as a guy, like, oh, I can have sex with anybody. And, you know, or it didn't mean anything, because, like, you know, in relationships and men cheating or whoever. But that women can't have sex and it not mean anything either. Like, we're not capable of taking out the emotion,
and that's the biggest part that I feel like now we're going into more of an open trend. You know, and it's still hard. I'll be honest with you, it's still hard being someone that grew up in this like really Catholic mentality, where I see someone have a shirt that says, you know, like what is it, like I'm a sucia or something like that, right? When I see that, I'm like, whoa, like, that's like, you're really putting it out there. So it takes, sometimes I go back to Vanessa and we talk a little bit, and I kind of like, I have to pull myself back and say, you know what, things are changing for the better. You know, I look at it that way, like, hopefully things are changing for the better. And this open mentality is coming in with that sexual health aspect behind it. That's my biggest thing. It's, let's have sex with whoever you want, right? But make sure that you're being healthy. Educate yourself.
With anything that
make
you
sure
do.
that you understand if you have any trauma, that you're not relying on somebody else. Make sure that that conversation is being had between the two partners, because it happens a lot back in the day, you know, where you will have, or nowadays too, where you will have sex with somebody, but that person doesn't know my intentions, and that person doesn't, I don't know their intention. So you're thinking it's casual sex.
There's no communication.
And, yeah, you're thinking it's casual sex. That person is thinking it's a date, you know, and then that other trauma starts and you start getting into more.
That is a big thing within sexuality, is that the whole intimacy piece, because it's easy to have sex, but it takes more intimacy to talk about sex than it does to have sex. Because even certain, like you mentioned earlier with the whole BDSM piece, there are certain things that I'm pretty sure almost everyone has that one desire where they're like, I'm going to tuck that in the corner, just not talk about that necessarily. To which, at the end of the day, when it comes to desire and fantasies and, you know, being with partners, there should really only be three rules. If you are, you know, happy and okay with your fantasy, as long as consenting and adults are involved, no animals or children, then no issues. If you are, you know, happily making that decision, that's one of the, I'd say at least a benefit of the whole Me Too movement, is that people are having conversations at least about consent and what that means, and going beyond the whole idea of no means no, but yes means yes. Shouldn't we be enthusiastic about sex?
I remember that conversation coming up, being that I am in a frat, we have a lot of these conversations, right? And one of my biggest role as a mentor and an advisor within my fraternity is to make sure that these guys know not to be doing stupid shit when they're on campus, right? Because my name is attached to them in any way, shape, or form. So I remember we had a lot of the conversations on consent lately. We had a workshop at one of our regional meetings, and we've had multiple workshops, and it's mostly I've been leading the organization to do it more because of these things that pop up 20 years later, you know, and like I said, my name's attached to it, you know, so it's like, I want to make sure. So consent has been in my mind a lot, you know, but then you also get a lot of these guys are like, man, bro, but that's lame as hell. Like, if I have to ask a girl all the time, like, oh, is it okay if I take your panties down?
But there's sexy ways to go about doing that. There's
exactly.
The whole idea of like, how does this feel? Do you like this? Can I put it in? Like, these are things, those are forms of consent, because you're actively asking, and not only are you, you know, asking, but you're also paying attention.
Right, and it's not a one-time thing. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You don't have to.
Yeah.
With consent, you can talk about it beforehand. It doesn't have to be, may I suck your nipple?
Yeah.
Remove your bra.
And that's exactly.
And that's how
like,
it does. I'm going to use that line.
That's exactly, that's perfect how you mentioned it, because you think about it as like a questionnaire, right? And it's like, yes, we could have sex. Yes, this, that. Because yes, you can have sex. Because even when it comes down to, yes, we're going to have sex, doesn't necessarily mean I could do this or I could do that, you know, or oral sex or all these other things. So that's a good way of thinking about it.
Back to the original question of what is sex too, because there's this idea that, you know, most people, when they think of sex, they're thinking of penis and vagina. They're not thinking of oral sex being sex, or that genital play also includes sex. Does that mean lesbians are never having sex? Like, what, you know, what does that mean for people? Like, what is sex? And I really think that that's for people to, you know, determine for themselves. Of course, it's not if we're just laying in the bed together with clothes on, we just had sex. But going beyond the whole penile vaginal penetration, I wanted to say it's awesome that you are doing this work with your fraternity, because I'm actually in a sorority too, and I know not only is there the scrutiny of being in Greek life, but there's the scrutiny of being in Greek life and of color. So we're already being micro. We have to tell people, like, look, no, you sit this one out. There's actually a black fraternity not too long ago for spring break. They actually had like this party on the beach and cleaned up afterwards, because the narrative would have been, oh, that black frat. They wouldn't even thought that they were black frat. That black gang, they were all wearing these two colors, that black gang, they were out there on the beach doing whatever and didn't clean up. And so they definitely made sure that narrative was like, no, we're going to party, but we're also going to clean up this beach.
We had a recently, so we're a Latino fraternity, and we had a party recently, and it was funny to see how the guys all wore a white bandana, and they were called safety officers. And I was like, yo, this is cool, you know, because And as lame as it might sound, me saying it, but it was cool the fact that they put it out there and they said, there's going to be about six of us that are sober. We're not drinking at all. We're wearing a white bandana. We're called safety officers. If any guy is doing anything to you, you come into, and these are big guys. I mean, they're my size, but like much more in shape. So, and they're walking around the campus. So, and the party went well, and girls did not feel weird because, you know, fraternity life, Greek life already has a negative connotation nowadays with, you know, rape culture. So going to a Latino frat party, the first thing you think is, oh crap, this, you know, they're gonna lace my drink or whatnot. So the fact that we had safety officers walk around,
I don't think that whenever I go to any like fraternity or sorority of color and I'm going to a party, I'm like, whoo, okay, I'm good. My guard is almost too down because I'm like, okay, I am safe in this space.
That's a big difference.
Anybody else, I'm like,
walk around. So we had that, and I thought it was cool, and a good way for people to start seeing a different trend happening. And I think, you know, being able to have that within our area.
Well, it goes back to what we were saying about having access to the resources. Like, people know if I need help, I know where it's at, right? Look for these white bandanas, or look for this.
And that's very much if I had seen that in college, like that, that's just amazing that that's the place that we have come to now with offering that support. And it really does, you know, come from a group effort because, of course, on the side of women, we can, you know, fight for our rights and do what we can. But it has to be a cultural shift as well. Like, it has to be a complete cultural shift in order for there to be success with consent and things like the Me Too movement. I know I keep referencing that, but it's just the first thing that comes to mind.
Now, we're getting close to the hour here, so I wanted to kind of quickly wrap up and mention, we talked about a lot about resources, and I feel like that's probably the main point that we've gotten out of this conversation is being able to know where those resources are. And being that we're our podcast, we want to put out content out there that people can know where to go, right? Where can they go if they're in the Chicagoland area, if they want, for example, to bring you to a campus or to talk to kids, where can they go to find more information?
So for me directly or just sexual health resources?
For you directly.
For me directly. So my Gmail is actually the same as the Facebook page. So it's NikkiHartsPublicHealth@gmail.com, all lowercase. And you can definitely reach out to me. I'd love to come to talk to students, talk to adults, talk to seniors, because just like people want to say, not my kid, they also want to say, not my grandma. No, it's your kid and your grandma. But that is absolutely... I would love to speak to anyone of any age about sexuality in general, because once we start having open conversations, everything else just seems a little less scary.
Yeah, and then once you break the ice in the beginning, then you start getting a lot of those questions out.
Yeah, I really hope parents too, and I think, you know, we're getting there, we're getting to that point, but parents too, I think, need to be in these conversations or learning how to have the conversations, because like we've been saying, like, it's been so taboo, and it's not about like the kids and you individually going out to seek the resources, but like just parents and families also seeking these resources so they can also be resources for their kids or, you know, whomever.
Now, we are here in this, in the city of Chicago, and one of the things that we talked about a lot in this podcast right now, in this conversation, was the safe sex part behind it. And I know that a lot of us perhaps might not have insurance or don't, or feel weird talking to someone. What are the resources that they could take advantage here in the city of Chicago for STD testing?
Absolutely. So actually, I have a question for both of you, because I find that most people don't know the answer to this, and it's something that they can spread around as knowledge. How old can you be to legally test for HIV or STDs without your parents in the state of Illinois?
I would think 16.
I say 14.
What about you guys?
Everybody off the camera.
It's medical. I would think no age. Right? If you're physically capable walking into a clinic, then...
The answer is 12.
12, so without a parent.
Without your parents, if you want to go in and just say, I want to have a test, you can go in by yourself at the age of 12. And actually, the state of Illinois does have an HIV and STD hotline that you can call and actually have someone find the resources for you, too, so that you don't have to, you know, flip back and forth, okay, what did they say? What was the address? And at the corner of what? You can actually have someone give you those resources directly, and the number is 800-88. So that is AIDS.
There you go.
also 243-2437. But
who does numbers? No one's gonna know that, right? Numbers?
And normally, or what's your suggestion as far as getting tested on a yearly basis, on a 3 month basis, after every partner? What's your advice on that?
Honestly, all three. It really does depend. If you are, so there's a thing as sexual seasons. If you are in a season where it is open season, then you probably want to go between partners, or more so like every 3 months or so. Mm-hmm. If you are a little less active, then that would be the 6 to 12 month mark, which is making sure that you're having up to date results. And there are some places that will actually give you your results electronically too, so you can share that with someone. And that's power to say, here's the last time I was tested, here's a date, and here are all my results. Mm-hmm. And a big thing is when you go and get tested for STDs, especially if you do like a urine test, make sure you're getting your throat swabbed as well if you have oral sex, or getting your anus swabbed mm-hmm. if you have anal sex. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely something that I encourage a lot of my fraternity brothers or anybody is to get tested regularly. I try to go as much as I can as well, because I just want to know what's in my body, what mm-hmm. I have, you know, what I have to deal with, and if anything needs to be fixed or taken care of, right? Mm-hmm. It's like a car, like when you're checking your car, you know?
I do have a few locations if you all are interested in hearing about them. So there's one up north. It is the Lakeview STI Specialty Clinic. They're located at 2849 North Clark. And they do free STD testing. And if you think you may need a throat swab, that's definitely one of the places where you have to request it, but they mm-hmm. do offer it. And then all the way south in Roseland, there is the Roseland STI Specialty Clinic. It's over on 115th Street. And then somewhere around the middle at like 2600 South Michigan, there is AIDS Healthcare Foundation, and they do HIV testing. They also do STD testing, and they do it all for free. These are three places where you can go in the city for free. And I really like AIDS Healthcare Foundation because they only are open Monday and Thursday, but it's from 4 p.m. to 8 p.m. So if you're a 9-to-5-er, that is a perfect, you know, mm-hmm. opportunity to go in and be seen.
And you just need to be of age, so 12 years old. You don't need your insurance. You don't need money.
You would need an ID. You do need an ID.
Okay.
And so also there is Center on Halsted. They do HIV testing 7 days a week, with mm-hmm. the exception of major federal holidays and things like mm-hmm. that. Mm-hmm. But they do HIV testing on Sundays.
Awesome. So do you want to share any social media handles out there that you want, if somebody wants to follow you on social media?
Absolutely. So my Facebook is Nikki Hearts Public Health. That's the Facebook page. I also have the Smirk page as well. I'll be definitely putting out a lot more content. I know in the past I've been very sexual health related with Nikki Hearts Public Health, but this October I'll be doing more with breast cancer. Mm-hmm. And Smirk is going to be doing movies about Let's Talk Month. So I'm going to be reviewing movies like She's Too Young. I'm going to be reviewing Real Women Have Curves. I'm going to be reviewing movies that talk about, you know, sexuality and coming of age, to kind of help bridge the conversation between parents and kids. Mm-hmm. Too.
Awesome.
That'll be great.
So for those watching the podcast, listening to the podcast, if you want more information, also the links to her social media will be available in the description of this podcast. Also, feel free to follow us on social media, mostly of all the social media outlets mm-hmm. out there, as @LaVerdadLTD. Once again, thank you so much for coming by to the show. It was definitely a very
informative
podcast. Yeah. I feel like we still need to get into more conversations. So hopefully we could bring you back.
We didn't cover everything.
No, not at all. Thank you for having me. This was a great time. Thank you
so much. For those listening, thank you guys, and watching, thank you guys. Peace and God bless.